and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. And today, we're taking you back 41 years to Zimbabwe, when it was still called Rhodesia and was still ruled by a white minority government. Trish Flanagan reports.
It's March 1970, and the former British colony of southern Rhodesia has declared itself a republic.
Prime Minister Ian Smith, after 3.5 years of fruitless negotiation with Britain following Rhodesia's declaration of independence, called a referendum to vote on a new constitution which, in his own words, would keep power in civilized hands for all time.
Wilfred Mbanga was a young black journalist working in Salisbury, as Harare was known at the time. But he had no vote in the referendum which brought in the republic.
Every white person had a vote, one vote. Not all blacks could claim a vote. You had to have property. You needed to have a minimum education, 8 years of primary school, and you owned property, either movable or immovable. They felt that then you were responsible enough to cast a vote.
Rhodesia, under Prime Minister Ian Smith, had been struggling with the British government for years. Britain had granted independence to other colonies in Africa, but refused to grant it to Rhodesia until they agreed to bring in majority rule. Ian Smith's Rhodesian Front Government hoped the declaration of a republic would win it recognition from the international community.
I remember the day very well because I had a drink that evening with the BBC correspondent who was in Rhodesia then, the late Peter Niswand. And we were talking about this and he was saying, well, you know, this is a declaration of war by the whites in Rhodesia against the black majority. Because the whole idea behind it was that they did not want interference from the British government. And they wanted to introduce more racial laws. Everything was separated along racial lines. Blacks lived in separate areas from whites, with separate hospitals, separate schools, even separate cemeteries.
And how did you feel about the declaration of the republic?
You know, I felt a slap in the face. I felt this was a declaration of a racial war. And in fact, a lot of young blacks in 1970 started leaving the country to take up arms. Initially to Zambia and then on to Tanzania. And then from there, they were then shipped either to China or to Russia for military training. All the black nationalist leaders were locked up. They were detained in several places and prisons without trial. And Rhodesia was going to be a white man's paradise. So there was, you know, no outlet for our frustration. There was no hope.
Only two countries, Portugal and South Africa, recognised the new republic. And the UN's economic sanctions, which had been imposed in 1965, continued.
So Smith and company couldn't travel, the banks' accounts were frozen, the country couldn't trade with the international community, and so on. And most countries took out all their diplomats from Rhodesia, and they expelled Rhodesian diplomats. Life was very difficult, but it actually worked in a way to encourage local industries. You know, this is one thing that the Smith regime did for our country. Because of economic sanctions, they tried to bypass them. They introduced their own industries, you know, which became very, very proficient at what they were doing. Instead of importing anything, they made it themselves. They started making tires, which they used to import. They started assembling vehicles. You know, they would somehow manage to get kits from Japan and then assemble the cars in Rhodesia. There were all sorts of industries, and the country became an industrial center because of this. The country actually prospered. You know, the Rhodesian dollar was actually quite strong. At one time, it was actually one for one with the British pound.
Ian Smith's beleaguered government set about trying to increase the white population.
There was a deliberate policy to invite whites from all over the world to come and increase the number of whites in the country. Because don't forget, at that time, the white population was about 250,000. And the black population was something in the region of 6 to 8 million people. And I remember very well one of the ministers speaking in Parliament, talking about, you know, we want to encourage immigration, more white people must come. And then turning to black members of parliament, he would say, well, you must tell your people to exercise birth control.
And yet, Rhodesian society was by no means as divided as neighbouring apartheid South Africa. There were a few black MPs in the Rhodesian parliament, and there were also white activists working for majority rule.
They tried all sorts of initiatives. I mean, I remember there was one where they even had jingles on radio, the Harmony campaign. And they used to sing, you know, these jingles on radio and TV. Harmony, let's all live together in harmony. They tried. My parents were very strong Catholics. And we always had, you know, English Jesuits in our home. And in fact, I went to a school myself where I was educated by English Jesuits and French Canadians. You know, and they were opposed to the Smith regime. And also at work, I had colleagues, white colleagues, who were different from, you know, the other whites who supported Ian Smith. You know, in fact, my own wife was, you know, a white Rhodesian who was rejected by all her friends and so on, was in fact sacked by a newspaper when we got married.
But there were tensions with the police.
I had a friend, a white friend, who came to visit me, and he came at night on his way back to town. He was on his motorbike. And he was stopped by the white policeman. And they said to him, you know, what are you doing here? And he said, oh, well, I'd come to visit my friend, Wolf, here. And the policeman looked at him and said, well, who is this friend of yours? And he said, oh, you know, he lives here, you know. My friend said, well, have I done something wrong? Have I committed an offense? And the policeman said, no, you haven't. He said, but, you know, it is odd to see a white man in a black township at night. And he said, well, if we saw you walking on your hands, you know, it's not illegal, but it would probably stop you and question you. Yeah. And he said, well, seeing a white man in a black township at night, you know, is odd. So the next thing, they also picked me up and took us both to the police station for questioning.
By 1972, many of the young black activists who had left the country began to return, armed, trained and ready to fight. The war against white minority rule began in earnest.
The Rhodesians were very, very strong militarily. I mean, they had jet fighters, they had helicopters, gunships, and a strong army, well-equipped, well-trained. So the odds were, you know, stacked against any insurrection. But there was always hope. You know, we all lived in hope that one day we'd be able to become independent and have majority rule. You know, we saw what was happening. You know, the majority rule started in North Africa and moved south. And we could see the countries, you know, turning, you know, independent and so on. And we all yearned for this to happen in our own country. And so, you know, it gave us hope. But then south of us, in South Africa, there was that apartheid government, which was also very, very strong militarily. And it didn't look like it was going to fall, you know, anytime soon. And they were supporting the Smith regime. So, you know, we weren't sure that we'd be able to see majority rule in our lifetime.
The war finally came to an end with democratic elections in the newly established state of Zimbabwe in April 1980. Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF won, and he has been in power ever since. Wilf left Zimbabwe in 2003 after he was declared an enemy of the people. He now publishes a newspaper, The Zimbabwean, in exile.
Wilf Mbanga was talking to Trish Flanagan for Witness. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.